from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The idea is that by having diverse interests in the separation of powers, by having each branch be a partisan of itself, what you get is a counterbalancing of each other.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Adam Carrington, our first guest on today's program. Dr. Carrington is Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. We talked at length with Dr. Carrington about Federalist 51 and the separation of powers. Dr. Carrington, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is a subject on which you teach a class and have, of course, knowledge. That's the Federalist Papers. Now, don't worry, we're not going to cover all of them in these 10 minutes. It'll be a continuing series. So today, though, we want to take a look at Federalist 51, which is one of the more famous of the Federalist Papers. For people who don't know them by number, Dr. Carrington, tell us a bit about what Federalist 51 is all about.
Federalist 51 is about how do you keep separation of powers in practice. So up to that point, the previous couple Federalist Papers written by Madison had articulated what separation of powers was on paper, why it was important, what goods it caused. But then in 51, the question is, if you've established it, how do you keep it in practice? Because there were worries based on how attempts at separation of powers had gone in the states under the Articles of Confederation, that you can declare you want it all the time, but are there factors that are going to undermine it? And so 51 is how do you keep separation of powers through the process of things like checks and balances once it's been established.
All right, so into the actual language of Federalist 51, again written by Madison. So Madison in 51 fears a gradual concentration of several powers in the same department of government. Why is that a fear for Madison?
Right, and that's why he wants the checks.
Yeah.
This really is building off things he has said in Federalist 47 and 48 in particular, where, citing the French thinker Montesquieu, one of the most influential thinkers on the American Constitution outside of the founders themselves, the argument is to combine the powers of government, the legislative power to make laws, the executive power to carry them out, the judicial power to interpret and apply them, is to cause tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking behind that is you can just think of a couple ways that those powers combined could lead to tyranny. If the same people that make the laws get to enforce them, you could have a problem of partial enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I pass a law and then I target who gets punished and who doesn't for it. If you have the same people that make laws get to interpret them, so the legislative and judicial power, then you might not have equal application of the laws. And the idea is the separation of powers protects your liberty because it makes it so that no one entity gets control of how the laws are made and carried out. And because no one entity can get control over them, the laws rule because all end up being subject to them because all only can play one part in how they're carried out.
Talking Federalist 51 with Dr. Adam Carrington here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. There's a phrase, the multiplicity of interests in American society. How does that, the multiplicity of interests, protect the rights of its citizens?
What it does is it makes it, and this is a little bit where Federalist 51 meets Federalist 10, and the idea is that by having diverse interests in the separation of powers, by having each branch be a partisan of itself, the legislative a partisan of legislating, the presidency a partisan of executing the law, the judiciary a partisan of the application of the law, what you get is a counterbalancing of each other. And that counterbalancing makes it so that one subsection that may want to oppress the rest can't do it on its own. It has to get the agreement of other branches, of other interests, and that by doing so, you make it less likely that interests that are going to prevail are themselves going to be oppressive. And this is partly why you want to keep them separate, because what the founders were partly worried about was they said in Federalist 51, which branch is the most dominant? The legislative branch, because it's the most like a republic.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it's seen as most legitimate. So the idea was, we need this multiplicity of interests housed in different departments to make sure that one narrow, maybe oppressive body doesn't get control of all of the functions of government.
There's this language in Federalist 51, if men were angels, and essentially, you know, if men were angels, we wouldn't need to do some of these things, right? Take us through that reasoning for Madison.
Right, because one of the questions is, well, why doesn't government just work on its own? Why do you need to have checks and balances and separation of powers because of worries about power? Aren't the people ruling? Shouldn't we just let the people rule? And his argument is twofold, and it's both based on this idea of angels. He says, the very fact that government exists is a comment on human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he says, if men were angels, you wouldn't need government. Because what does government do? It brings the force of law and the force of coercion to bear in the cause of justice. But you only need coercion if people aren't willing themselves to follow justice.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is government over men is a comment on the problem of human nature. But then you turn it around. Who actually runs the government that is meant to control the fallacies of human nature? Men. So the very people that are meant to be limited are
right.
The ones doing the limiting. And that's where he says if government was run by angels, you wouldn't need limited government. And so the whole point is the protection of liberty, the protection of individual rights. But there are two threats. There's the threat of your neighbor. And that's why you have government.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have police. That's why you have laws enabling the police to do things. On the other side, though, you have government itself that needs to be limited. The delicate construction of the Constitution is meant to allow government to protect rights and itself not be a threat to rights.
Dr. Adam Carrington with us talking about Federalist 51 here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. So depending who you talk to these days, we have an executive branch running wild. We have judicial tyranny. We have perhaps a legislative branch that isn't doing enough or taking its powers more seriously. How do you think the separation of powers is being maintained today, generally?
It's a mixed bag. I wrote an article once comparing the government now to kind of Frankenstein's monster. It's partly separation of powers, partly not. What I'll say is I think there are two reasons for that. One is there's a competing philosophy that defines part of government, and that is the more progressive understanding of the bureaucracy, where the divide isn't among functions of government, legislative, executive, and judicial. It's between the assertion of will
mm-hmm.
and the practice of expertise. So one is the broad will of the people, the other is bureaucrats carrying it out, and that's divided up more by subject area. Are you an expert on environmental policy? Are you an expert on healthcare policy? And so both systems are existing at once. And the other is, I think, party loyalty over institutional loyalty. One big thing of Federalist 51 is to attach your own ambition. So we can't get rid of ambition, but
right.
to attach the ambition of a House member to the power of the House, to attach the ambition of a president to the power of the presidency and so forth. And I think in Congress especially, while the other branches are still willing to see themselves institutionally, the Congress is merely seeing itself as part of a party.
Mm-hmm.
So it's willing to accentuate other branches or even the administration when that branch is doing policy-wise what it wants. And it's not willing to see a difference between policy goals and the functions of its own and the prerogatives of its own branch. And so you've seen Congress giving away lots of its power to the bureaucracy or to the executive or even to the judiciary if it believes those branches will do policy-wise what it wants.
Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College, thanks for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Great to be here.
Up next, we talk with Michael Walsh about his recent book, Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the show. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your address. radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Michael Walsh, author of the recent book, Last Stand, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
So we'll get into the details of the book, but it's a wonderful read. What interests you? What got you interested in the stories of these no hope, last stand fights throughout history?
That's a good question. I would say, like with any writer, or as with any writer, a whole bunch of things kind of came together in my head. When a writer's looking to write his next book, and this one is my 16th published book, and 16th book period, come to think of it, you kind of come off the last book or two, which has taken you down into many strange dark alleys of history. And my previous two books, The Devil's Pleasure Palace and The Fiery Angel, were an examination of Western cultural history, mm-hmm. and an attack on the Frankfurt School, which is responsible for most of the cultural mayhem we're now going through. But in the course of that, I got very involved in Greek and Roman literature and history. That's one thing. Another thing is I come from a military family, as I make clear in Last Stands. My father was in the Marine Corps and was, in fact, at a last stand in the winter of 1950 in Korea at the Chosin Reservoir. And I just like to tell stories, and these are very stirring stories, and they are wrapped in the context of the current attack on masculinity, which the third wave feminists refer to as toxic masculinity, and to which I say, ladies, you want toxic masculinity.
Michael Walsh is with us. Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. What do you think happens to a civilization when its cultural heroes are not warriors?
Well, an example of this is France. I discuss the famous French epic poem, the Chanson de Roland, in one of the chapters of Last Stands. That poem, which comes from the right around the time of the First Crusade, certainly at the waning of the Christian, rather the waxing of the Christian and Muslim conflict in Spain, was actually based on an incident that had happened 200 years earlier during the reign of Charlemagne. And Roland, as every kid used to know, was the defender of the rear guard of Charlemagne as he went over the Pyrenees back towards the Holy Roman Empire, of which he was basically the first emperor. And they were attacked, in reality, by Basques, and in the poem, by Islamic forces. Roland became a national hero in France all throughout the Middle Ages under various names. Roland, of course, in French, and Orlando in Italian, and he was immortalized in Orlando Furioso by an Italian poet of the time, Ariosto, I believe. And then Orlando became the subject of several operas by Handel. He was quite a cultural totem, and he's faded from the French military ethos. They tried to bring him back in the 19th century during the Franco-Prussian War, but they lost that one so decisively that Roland is now effectively a marginalized and rather embarrassing relic of previous Gallic bellicosity. And so have a look at France today and tell me what you think of that.
In the prologue, Michael, you write that the time when civilians could opt out of global conflicts is long past, and so it remains true that the best way to preserve the peace is to prepare for war and hope it never comes. Is there also value in simply the preparation and the mindset that you discuss here?
Well, I think it gets back to the essential nature of men, which has been pushed down and pushed aside and is in the process of of being eradicated, or at least an attempt is made to do that. This is a part of the feminist problem, of course. And my next book, by the way, will be on women, just to show that I'm even-handed in my approach to this thorny problem. The idea is that the essential nature of men is trying to be changed, or at least contained. And I don't think that it can be contained. As I said, I think it tends to come out in ways that are perhaps not as socially acceptable. I think one of the very important parts of having a military is to civilize young men. Men need to be civilized.
Mm-hmm.
They are also a hierarchical sex. They sort themselves out even spontaneously into groups. One guy, the big guy, maybe is going to be the muscle, and the smart guy is going to be the leader, and the guy that can cook is going to be the cook. And before you know it, in any given group of young males, you have a kind of mini platoon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we cannot change and should not change. And I think the young feminists need to understand that the males need some experience. Now, does that mean they should have to go out and fight and kill people? Well, the Pentagon certainly thinks so, because for 20 years we've been fighting goat herds in Afghanistan to absolutely no accomplishment or purpose whatsoever. So the Pentagon enjoys these little wars because it bloods the troops and it helps them bring their chosen officers up the ranks with military experience. That is not the way to do it, but I can't really tell you what is.
A good portion of the book, of course, looks at these battles from Hastings to the Alamo to Little Bighorn and Grant at Shiloh. Michael, tell us a story. What is something that you wrote about one of these battles that will stick with you long after completing Last Stands?
Well, I think it's something that had stuck with me before I wrote it, which was the experience of Grant and Sherman at Shiloh. Shiloh is a crucial, critical battle in the early days of the Civil War. Grant had mustered himself out of the Army under the shadow of alcoholism charges. Sherman had spent some time in a mental institution, believe it or not, and the two of them, through an accident of fate, wound up at Shiloh, Sherman under Grant's command. And that was the first major engagement of the Civil War. The bloodshed that day was greater than all the American wars combined up to that point, just on the 2 days at Shiloh. And Grant realized at that point that the Civil War was not going to be over quickly, and that the only way to end it was to utterly destroy and crush the Confederacy. Now, luckily, he had in Sherman a guy who thought that as well. And both of them believed the most merciful war is the one that is the most vicious, the most thoroughly prosecuted, and the most final. And I think that's a lesson that we've completely forgotten. Mm.
Michael Walsh, author of the new book, Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Michael, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, Dwight Lindley from Hillsdale's English Department joins us to begin our occasional series on Victorian poetry. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. This month's review is Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary. The Perdomo Reserve is a medium to full-bodied blend, giving off notes of dark cocoa, espresso, and ending with a progressive complexity of mineral-rich zestiness. Come down to the shop for your Perdomo Reserve today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, or visit us on Instagram at Tobacco and Brew.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time. You get me every time.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We say hello to our listeners on one of our new affiliates, KWBW 1450 AM and 98.5 FM in Hutchinson, Kansas. Thank you for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined today by Dr. Dwight Lindley, Associate Professor of English at Hillsdale College. Dr. Lindley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
And we will begin with this particular segment, an occasional series on Victorian poetry, on which Dr. Lindley teaches here at Hillsdale College. And appropriately enough, we start with an introduction to Victorian poetry. So when we use that phrase, what are we talking about largely?
First of all, we're talking about poetry that happened during the reign of Queen Victoria, 19th century Queen of England, 1838 to 1901, which is a little bit arbitrary, but there really was a time dominated by her reign. And we can talk about literature during that time. So this is poetry written during her period. And the reason this is an interesting period to look back at, in part, and the reason why it's difficult for us to understand it, is that we don't really see poetry the same way that her age did, the way that period did, partially because of something that intervened between us. In the early 20th century, many of your readers, many of your listeners may be familiar with the poetry of people like T.S. Eliot, mm-hmm. who are called modernist poets. It's the modernist movement. And the interesting thing about that movement, early 20th century, after Victorian poetry and before us, is that they aimed to lift poetry up above popular culture in a way that it was not elevated during the 19th century. They wanted to make poetry exclusively highbrow in a way that, you know, we are frankly used to. Mm-hmm. Today, your average man doesn't know anything about poetry, even your average upper-middle-class man. Like, perhaps both you and I would qualify as that.
Yeah.
Doesn't know anything about poetry. It's just not part of the popular culture, except for people who, the relatively small number who have been educated into it. You know, even a minority of university-educated people. Okay, so anyway, it's not part of our popular culture. There are reasons for this from the 20th century. So looking back on the Victorian period, 1800s, it's hard to see how much it was present among them. The way that we relate to popular music, you know, to rock and roll, and to other forms of popular music today, we know all the lyrics.
Sure.
It's just built in. We repeat them back and forth to one another. We sing it back and forth. You know, it's just everywhere. It's in the water, so to speak. That's the way that they related to poetry and music. They had their music as well. But they would entertain themselves by reciting or reading poetry out loud to one another at night. We watch Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever.
Disney Plus, maybe.
Disney Plus, YouTube. They entertained one another by reading, well, one, enormous novels out loud that you know, took weeks to read, but also poetry, poetry reading, poetry recitation, poetry writing. Over the coming weeks, when we're going over different poets, it's good to keep this kind of context in mind, that they weren't just writing for college-educated English majors, which is, quite frankly, who a lot of poets have to write for today,
sure.
I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I send my English majors forth, and they are going to be part of the vast minority of people who read poetry, I hope. Whereas, you know, Alfred Lord Tennyson and the Rossettis that I mentioned and other people who wrote poetry in the 19th century, they could count on an audience. It was all around them.
Let's preview a little bit our future episodes. Who are some of the authors? You mentioned Alfred Lord Tennyson. Who are some of the authors of this poetry from this time that people might have heard of?
Well, Alfred Lord Tennyson, there's also the Brownings. We're going to go over in one of the coming sections poetry of Robert Browning. His wife, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, was also a very famous poet at the time, more famous than he was, in fact, than Robert Browning. There's the poetry of Matthew Arnold, which we'll cover. A friend of his named Arthur Hugh Clough was a well-known poet, not much read today. Others we could mention, there's a man named A.E. Housman, who was a famous poet at the time, also an Oxford professor of classics. Actually, he may have been at University of London. But anyway, A.E. Housman, there was a man named Gerard Manley Hopkins, whose poetry we'll cover.
Mm-hmm.
And then famously for his novels was Thomas Hardy, but who also wrote many poems, which we'll cover, look at a little bit.
This covers a lengthy period of time, as we mentioned, 1837 to 1901. But are there any overarching themes or motifs or styles we should sort of keep in mind as we begin our journey down this path?
Sure, sure. There are going to be a lot of themes. Now that you say that, it reminds me a little bit of cultural historical background might be helpful for thinking about the themes that we do see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Victorian period was a time of tremendous change socially, politically, personally for individuals. We can associate it with the Industrial Revolution, which went hand in glove with the later stages of the Scientific Revolution. Scientific Revolution, of course, we associate with Newton and others beginning in the 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the 19th century, it was really being applied technologically to the development of tools and machines for production, the improvement of the means of production in factories, and as well as in transportation, train technology, boating technology was rapidly improving. And then even by the end, end of the 19th century, they were starting to look at flight technology. But anyway, so you had this industrial revolution and kind of scientific technological development revolution, which was changing the world around them. Along with this, as you have industrial development, you have urbanization, because that's where the economy is going. Those structures are being built in the cities, and you have new industrial cities that are swelling as the countryside empties out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phenomenon familiar to us in the Midwest. We have our Rust Belt towns that empty out, and people go to the cities. Well, this is another time of that. You have urbanization. With that, you have the kind of displacement of people who have grown up in family and community structures, in the hinterlands, who are now away from their traditions and their families, and they're in the city, and maybe they're moving up into the middle class, because you also have a drastically expanding middle class with the economy growing, which means you also have increasing numbers of people who are educated, literacy going, I don't want to say through the roof, but it's rising rapidly, which means you have a lot more people reading,
mm-hmm.
and people with spare time in the evening who are not just bone tired at the end of the day. So you have a book industry that just really expanding rapidly. People have time to read poetry. So on the one hand, people have time and money for things like poetry, literature. On the other hand, their lives are changing so rapidly, so dynamically, and so actually unsettlingly and disturbingly at times.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is different. Nothing is the same. Everything is expanding. I live around people I don't know anymore.
Right.
All these kinds of things. Poetry actually provides a space of stability and familiarity and beauty that could be shared in a time where people needed that.
With that, we set the table for our future discussions in this series on Victorian poetry with Dr. Dwight Lindley, Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Lindley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Scott.
Up next, we're joined by Hillsdale alum and PJ Media senior writer Tyler O'Neill to discuss 10 climate predictions for 2020 that went bust. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Tune in to North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill, featuring music, art, health, wellness, shopping, and more.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can follow us on Twitter. Search for us at Hillsdale Radio. At Hillsdale Radio on Twitter. We're joined now by Tyler O'Neill, a 2012 graduate of Hillsdale College, currently senior editor at PJ Media, also the author of the book Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tyler, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Scott.
Hey, first of all, give people an idea of what they will find if they do follow you over at PJ Media, pjmedia.com, or if they follow your Twitter feed at Tyler2O'Neill. What kind of stuff could they expect to find, Tyler?
Yeah, you can find a conservative take on the news of the day, particularly things like Sarah Huckabee Sanders just announcing her run for governor in Arkansas. You can see especially my takes on the threat that the Biden administration poses to conservative principles and to conservative speech, especially following up, like you mentioned, with my book, The Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Biden administration has a lot of ties to the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they use a lot of the same tactics to demonize conservatives and Christians, even mainstream groups, and tie them with really, the more dangerous negative aspects of our society, launching this kind of new, war on domestic terror that's being talked about. And even Tulsi Gabbard recently issued a very strong warning about that. You can find that on my byline at PJ Media and Twitter, Tyler2 O'Neill.
And by the way, if you head back into the archives here at the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, you'll also find a conversation between Tyler and me about Making Hate Pay, the corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center, back in the archives of the program. Today, though, Tyler, we're going to talk about a piece up at pjmedia.com. People can find it. Egg on Their Faces, 10 Climate Alarmist Predictions for 2020 That Went Horribly Wrong. So have you been collecting these predictions through the years and just waiting for the day to point out how wrong they were?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's always a constant struggle to keep up because there are so many predictions, and they're often so wrong that most of the legacy media pushing the climate alarmist narrative never revisits these predictions right. that have been made and talks about how wrong they were. So it's like you have to do some research to figure out, oh, what did they say about 2020? What did they say about this, that, or the other thing? And you see, well, lo and behold, they were wrong yet again.
So let's talk about just a couple. There's 10 of these on the piece. You can find it at pjmedia.com. The very first one, though, this prediction by a NASA model that the average global temperature would be rising by 3 degrees Celsius by 2020. Did that actually happen?
Well, I bet you can guess based on the headline. But no, we actually have, depending on two different ways that you cite it, either the global temperature has risen 0.64 degrees Celsius or 0.5 degrees Celsius from 1987. So that's a, you know, an exaggeration of six times what actually happened. They said, he said 3 degrees when actually it was 0.5 degrees. Now that's, you know, this is the weird thing about climate alarmism and climate science is that it stands to reason that carbon emissions would increase, you know, would increase the greenhouse effect and, you know, that it would increase the temperature of the world. But the problem is there are just so many factors that we don't fully understand. So while maybe it's having some impact, there are a lot of other aspects, other parts of the weather ecosystem, other parts of climate science that we just don't know enough about.
Further down the list, Egg on Their Faces, 10 Climate Alarmist Predictions for 2020 That Went Horribly Wrong. There's a prediction about the seas rising, and this is one that seems to be recycled essentially every year, right? The seas will rise, and beachfront property will be gone, and we'll have all these issues. This one's specifically an EPA prediction from back in 1986 that by 2020, Florida seas would rise by 2 feet. That didn't happen, so what was the actual number?
Yeah, so according to NOAA, that's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is a climate alarmist agency pretty much, the sea level at Virginia Key has risen by about 9 centimeters, which works out to about 3.54 inches. They said 2 feet, you got 3.5 inches. It's particularly interesting when you have, you know, former President Barack Obama buying beachfront property after his presidency when he's suggesting that Trump's policies would result in huge catastrophic climate destruction. But, you know, that's the level of hypocrisy we see these days.
And also a very neat part of this piece up at PJ Media is that you include screenshots and the actual look at the, you know, the thing that was written in print. This one was actually not that far in the past. A 2009 prediction that the glaciers would be gone at Glacier National Park. And, you know, the predictions themselves get people interested and upset. I mean, no one wants to see the glaciers. I mean, what would you call it? If Glacier National Park with no glaciers, might have changed the name, of course. But we don't have to worry about that. This prediction, again, was wrong.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing was, in 1992, they predicted, that was the first prediction, and then in March of 2009, they also predicted that the glaciers would fully disappear. But even by 2010, Glacier National Park erected signs warning that the glaciers would be gone
yes.
by 2020.
Yes.
And then in 2020, they rushed to change the time since the glaciers still existed. I mean, this is what we're seeing with the climate predictions. I think they wouldn't have to change it. I mean, even if the glaciers were gone, glaciers still impacted the landscape. So actually, I'm pro Glacier National Park even without glaciers in 2187, when maybe, although who knows? I mean, climate is not clear, so it could end up being stronger glaciers by 2187. Who knows?
And to be clear, you're not making...
I certainly don't.
One more. We've got time for one more here as we talk with Tyler O'Neill from PJ Media, senior editor there, pjmedia.com, this piece on climate alarmist predictions for 2020. Global emissions predicted some years ago to be, 5 to 10 times present levels back then when it comes to CO2. And that has not come close to happening. There's been a couple of bad predictions on emissions, I guess.
Yeah, so they said 40 to 80 years after burning fossil fuel peaks. Well, here it is. If present trends continue, with economics the only limit, CO2 concentration will have doubled by 2020. That was the 1987 prediction in the Vancouver Sun. Yet the CO2 in the atmosphere didn't come close to doubling since 1987. In March 1978, when the article was published, there were 335 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. In February 2020, there were 413 parts per million in the atmosphere. That's an increase of 23%, a far cry from doubling it, which would have been 670 parts per million.
Hmm. Well, you can find the rest over at pjmedia.com, egg on their faces, 10 climate alarmist predictions for 2020 that went horribly wrong. They're all there, and they're all noted by Tyler O'Neill. You can follow him on Twitter, Tyler2O'Neill, and check out his recent book, Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tyler, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Yeah, thanks so much, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale's Politics Department discussing Federalist 51. We talk with Michael Walsh, author of the recent book Last Stands, Why Men Fight When All Is Lost. Dwight Lindley from Hillsdale's English Department began our occasional series on Victorian poetry. And Hillsdale alum Tyler O'Neill walked us through 10 climate predictions for 2020 that went bust. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Just search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You can follow the show on Facebook. Email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. To find out more about Hillsdale College, head to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time. You get me
every time. Sometimes you have to go away to get away to relax. Enjoy an affordable staycation experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. Standard rooms only $89 a night, Sunday through Thursday. Call or book online now. 1-800-280-UWIN or windriver.com. Offering mobile check-in and check-out. Valid through March 20th. Must have a River Club card. Some restrictions apply. Use promo code WINTER21. Join us for a safe and comfortable stay at Wind River Resort and Casino.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge.
Democracy Prep Charter School in Las Vegas, Nevada, is being sued by a senior for violating his First and 14th Amendment rights. You see, William Clark was directed to unlearn his Judeo-Christian values or suffer failing grades and no graduation.
We rely on your generous support to continue to provide justice for all. Learn more at pji.org.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441. Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993 and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
Tune in to North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill, featuring music, art, health, wellness, shopping, and more. Tune in to North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill, featuring music, art, health, wellness.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.